My name is David House, and we're sitting and talking with Arlen Asher, who is a saxophone player, educator, and has been in New Mexico for a lot of years. How are you?
How am I?
Yeah.
I'm okay, considering the age and all that stuff.
You've been here for a long time in New Mexico.
Long time. My wife and two sons and I moved out in 1958 to take a job as a TV director at KNME.
Okay.
I had just gone on the air, and by sort of a coincidence, we drove out to New Mexico. I was going to Iowa State College at the time, at Ames, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And on a whim, we just drove out one 3-day break. And lo and behold, there was a job available. I applied for it. And 6 weeks later, they wrote and said, come on down.
Nice.
1958.
Very nice. And before that, you said you were in Iowa.
Right.
Right. And, okay, let's go all the way back. Let's go back a little bit. Let's just go back to...
Before recorded history.
Well, you know, before I was recording history.
Yeah,
maybe,
that's true, yeah.
So, where did you grow up?
I grew up on a farm in North Missouri, about 100 miles north of Kansas City. And as a kid, I went to a one-room schoolhouse, you know, where you had all 8 grades in one room. I wouldn't have missed that for the world.
Really?
I used to get up at 6 in the morning and go milk the cow.
Wow.
And then try to wade through 3- and 4-foot snowdrifts to get down to that one-room schoolhouse.
Wow.
And that was about the first 10, 11 years of my life back in Missouri, North Missouri.
And so where did the musical influences come from?
Well, it came when we got electricity. I know this has got to sound strange to a lot of people, right? But we got electricity, I think it was 1937 or 38. And with that, of course, came a dependable radio. And that's where the music started. Well, actually, my mother was a musician, and she tried to encourage me to take piano lessons, which I did. And I absolutely hated it. Mm. And I almost gave up music entirely because I feared the music lesson so much that I kept quoting Franklin Roosevelt as I walked up the stairs. You know that famous phrase where he said, "You have nothing to fear but fear itself." And that's every time I went to a lesson. And the teacher was great. I just didn't care for it.
Well, what was it about the piano that just didn't?
I have no idea. Because now, of course, like they always say, I wish I had continued, mm-hmm, naturally.
Well, you know, I want to continue kind of through your history a little bit, but that kind of segues a little bit into something else I wanted to ask. If there was some other instrument, maybe besides the piano.
Oh, yeah. Well, that came with the radio, because there were two radio stations up in Iowa, up north, and one was WOI in Ames, Iowa, which was Iowa State College, and the other one was WSUI in Iowa City. University of Iowa. They both had jazz shows. And by 1939, I had discovered these stations. And I started listening to both stations. And, of course, that's where I heard Benny Goodman for the first time, who was, my first influence. Because Goodman, of course, was the man back in those days. And the other man, of course, was Duke Ellington. And Ellington and I just absorbed as much as I possibly could from these two radio stations. At WSUI, the one in Iowa City, they had a program called Rhythm Rambles, which was at 12 noon, Monday through Friday. And so I was about 5 minutes running time from my my one-room school.
And that's in the snow, too?
Well, no. No, in the snow it took quite a bit longer.
I was thinking you'd be pretty determined, man. You never know.
But when it wasn't snowing, I ran home during the noon hour and caught this 30-minute show from WSUI called Rhythm Rambles from 12 until 12:30, then went back to school. And then the late afternoon, WOI had a program called, Today's Music. And I listened to that from 5 until sign-off time.
Great.
And that's where I first heard the people I wanted to be like, or wanted to try to be like.
Yeah. So it makes me think. I remember that at that point, jazz was the popular music.
Yeah,
it was like the stuff that you danced to, and
I mean, people were listening to Count Basie and Duke Ellington and, of course, Goodman and a few other bands. Of course, Glenn Miller made it really popular in terms of dance music, not jazz as such, but dance music. But it was good music.
Was it considered kind of radical, though? You know, kind of edgy, like hip-hop might have been a few years ago, or...
I don't remember it being that way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's because I was too absorbed in the whole thing, and I didn't see that part of it. I really don't know.
What did your parents think about that?
Well, my mother wanted me to be a concert pianist. And I had, I suppose, some leanings toward that sort of thing. Although I didn't really care for the piano lessons, I got along okay, and... I just really couldn't get into it, and I finally persuaded her to buy a metal clarinet. This was 1940, which she got down at the corner drugstore. That's the only music store in town at the time. And at least she bought the clarinet and said, yeah, let's see what happens.
And she was hoping you'd be a concert clarinet.
I imagine she was hoping I would give up clarinet and play piano.
Okay.
I don't know.
So it was the clarinet. Was there another instrument that you might have thought about at some point?
No, I
just
at
was
that
the
time,
clarinet, that was it.
In 1940, 41, 42, during the early years of the 40s, clarinet was the instrument for me. I really wasn't that interested.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, later on, I started adding one tube at a time, and because I wanted to express or wanted to explore the different tone colorings, the different instruments.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned Benny Goodman and Duke Ellington. So tell me what it was. It sounds like, you know, you said Benny Goodman was the man and that Duke Ellington was the man. What was so special about those guys?
I have no idea. I mean, I can't really express that. It was just something that... Well, I'm sure you've heard things where you would say, gee, I want to do that. I want to be like that. That's what it was with those guys. And, of course, there were other bands, too. Count Basie, of course, was high on the list back in those days. He was just kind of coming out of Kansas City at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only 100 miles north of Kansas City, but I never got down there to hear any of these people.
Okay.
Too young. Although I started playing in bars at the age of 12. I played most of the bars in northern New Mexico, or New Mexico, excuse me, northern Missouri, at the age of 12, 13, 14, 15.
Wow.
Back in those days, you could do that sort of thing.
And so at that point, you were playing jazz? What were you?
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, in high school, we had a trio based on the Goodman Trio, piano, drums, and clarinet. We were very fortunate to have a really fine jazz pianist in the school. I mean, he was really tops. Even today, he would be considered a very fine pianist. And so we formed this trio when I was a sophomore in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the drummer was a sophomore, and the pianist was a junior. And we kept it going for 3 years and played some of the proms. And we had a youth club, played for that.
Cool. And are those guys still playing today? Or are they still around? Or do you have any idea what's going on?
I've completely lost contact with both of those guys. I had met the drummer. He was through New Mexico about 6 or 7 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about those days. But I haven't seen him since then. The pianist, I have no idea.
Okay. And so you ended up doing that, and you played, you know, in Missouri... 14, 15, 16, was that just it? Did it just take off from there, or did you want to do that as a career? Was that possible for you?
Well, I don't think I had had set any goals as a career at that age. I after graduation from high school, I did go to a school to study music, Kirksville State Teachers College,
mm-hmm.
in Northeast Missouri. It's now Truman University, I believe. And I was there about a year, I guess, and I had the most fortunate event of my life happen at that time. I met my wife-to-be, and then, of course, the Korean War interrupted, and I spent some time in the Army, and during the time I was in the Army, I changed my idea about what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to go into broadcasting. And so when I got out of the Army in 1954, I went to Iowa State College. It was college at that time, not university, in Ames, Iowa, and enrolled in a television and radio broadcasting program. And studied that for 4 years. And as I told you, I got the job with KNME immediately following that. I stayed in broadcasting about 3-4 years. And then I decided, well, maybe music is really what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. What was it that turned you to broadcasting in the first place? What was that event?
Because I thought it would have, and I still believe this, thanks to people like you at KUNM and other stations similar, I thought it had a very necessary niche in the lives of Americans, well, people in general, worldwide. I still believe that. It's a very important thing for good. It's not used that way very often, as we have very momentarily discussed. But with public broadcasting, it has evolved into something that is really what I had in mind in the first place. Back in those days, even though I was in on the ground floor at KNME, I still felt that I really wanted to go into music, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of kept itching.
Yeah. Right.
And so you ended up out here in New Mexico, and you started doing, after the stint with KNME, you started doing some teaching.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, actually, when we first moved here, I accidentally met a couple of other fellows, and we started a band, Billy Morris on trumpet and Larry Case on trombone, and it was a Dixieland band. And actually, we didn't start the band. There was another fellow who asked us to play for him. Unfortunately, he passed away just a few months after he asked us to play, and we kind of took over. So the music thing began almost immediately after we had moved. And it just kind of kept going. I formed my own quintet 2 or 3 years later, still kept the Dixieland thing going. I didn't start teaching until about 1965, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, tell me about what New Mexico was like. What was it like to play? I mean, was it a welcome thing? Was it hard to get work when you first came here and started playing in the band?
I'm tempted to say no, it wasn't hard, because there weren't very many people in town. Of course, it was a very small town at that time. And there weren't that many musicians, although there were some very, very good musicians, but not very many of them. So we played most of the available gigs. It just kind of developed into the quintet. I guess maybe I formed the quintet because nobody would hire me, and I had to form my own group. So I say, on one hand, well, it was easy to get the jobs, but to get the ones I wanted, I guess I had to form my own group.
So why was it that you had to form a quintet to be able to get the gigs?
It just fell into a natural thing. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an unusual, you'd think it very unusual at this time. Back in Iowa, I had worked with a very fine accordionist. And of course, when you say the word accordion, ooh, you know, come on. But he played great jazz. And the very first day we were here in New Mexico, there was a fellow out distributing garbage cans at an apartment we had just rented. And my wife got to talking to him, and he asked, well, what does your husband do? And he said, well, he plays clarinet and saxophone and flute and works for KNME. He says, oh, yeah, well, I play accordion. Why don't you have him come by and maybe audition?
What did your wife say to that?
She said, yeah, okay. By the way, she's been, you wouldn't believe how supportive she has been for 55 and a half years now.
That's great. That's really great. So, I'm kind of getting a feeling that something I want to ask you about. Where is the music? I mean, Is the music personal to you in some way that you can express? I mean, what is it about jazz that moves you?
Well, first of all, let me say that nearly all kinds of music moves me, like a woodwind quintet or a symphony orchestra moves me a great deal. But one of the things we did at KNME, I guess we must have been, after I had actually left the station, a bunch of us got together and produced a program called Jazz is a Feeling. And I don't think I can express it any better than that. It is a feeling that I cannot describe in words. It's just it's a happiness, a warm all over feeling, whatever.
That's great.
I just love it.
So are there any other musics besides jazz that do that for you?
Not that much. Mm-hmm. Not even close, really.
Mm-hmm. And so is it the creative outlet that you can get through jazz that you can't get from anything else? Is it for you listening to that or expressing that does that? I know that a lot of times when I listen to jazz musicians play, there almost seems to be a melding that goes on because you're doing this improvisation and you're constantly communicating back and forth and doing this real spontaneous, and I mean, you know, a supercomputer couldn't create those interactions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so my guess is that helps create this alchemy that's almost a high. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is sort of an alchemy. How I play depends on who I'm playing with. Like I'll be playing one style with one person, perhaps a slightly different or maybe radically different style with another person. And I can admire both people or all the people equally. It's just a different bag. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you, really. It is a feeling that I cannot express adequately in words. Mm-hmm. It has to come, if at all, it has to come out of the tubes, the instruments.
Well, then, I'm trying to get this out of you. I'm trying to figure this out. So maybe the best way to go ahead and do it is you brought your axe with you.
Let's see if the reed is wet enough. I brought one of nine. I play several of these things, or try to. Okay. All four saxophones and three flutes and three clarinets and so forth and so on. But brought the alto today. One of the guys who really inspired me back in 1939, 1940, was Johnny Hodges. He got me good when he played a ballad. I've never heard anybody play ballads, and I don't think anybody ever has or ever will again play ballads like Johnny Hodges. He used to have this scoop up to a note. He would start maybe a half a note below the pitch and bring it up. There's no way I can duplicate it, but I might give it a try.
Okay.
That sort of thing, he had this warmth, sensuous sound. I have never heard anybody else ever, and I'm sure it'll never happen again. But anyway, the scoop is what I'm talking about right here. But he had, you listen to Johnny Hodges and you say, why would I even try it?
Well, you know what? That's some emotion right there. That's some emotion right there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular, the ballad that you're talking about, or any particular Johnny Hodges ballad that that you can think of that...
Yeah, well, that one. Which is called Daydream. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I first heard that in about 1940. I can't tell you exactly when, but about that time.
Okay.
When I was in the fifth, sixth grade, I guess, or whatever. And another ballad that he has done, well, I think he did, before he died, he recorded an album of tunes of his, Billy Strayhorn's, and Duke Ellington's. I think he called the album, Everybody Knows Johnny Hodges. Okay. And on this particular album, there is a song called A Flower is a Lovesome Thing. And this one, I think, would probably give the idea of what Johnny Hodges was all about better than any words could or anybody.
Great.